welcome to the show. If it's Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. Christmas is upon us, and the racing world awaits the opening of Santa Anita on December 26th. We also received word this week about renovations to Belmont Park in the near future. I'm Bill Gottimer. My co-host, Mike Moreau, is still unavailable, but we hope to have him back next week, which will be for our year of the end of year show, which will be on Friday. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. We hope you enjoyed our encore presentation last week when we spoke with Hall of Fame jockey Angel Cordero. Back live this week, we will focus on the announcements about Belmont and speak with NYRA CEO Christopher Kay. We want to thank our guest from 2 weeks ago, the tremendous equine photographer Nicole Marie Thomas. If you missed that show, it's well worth going back to hear it, as it is available in our archives. Now, being on my own tonight, we'll speak about the news quickly. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming races of the week, and then we'll listen to an interview I conducted this afternoon with Christopher Kay regarding the announcement at Belmont about Belmont Park. In the news, we want to congratulate jockey Kendrick Carmouche for his 3,000th career win. Clearly, he has many more in his future, but it's a nice milestone, and fittingly, he got the 3,000th win at Parks, where he had so much success early on in his career. On a sad note, we mark the passing this week of great trainer Leroy Jolly. He was the trainer of Genuine Risk, Foolish Pleasure, Honest Pleasure, General Assembly, Gulch, Manila, to name all but a few. He was clearly at the top of the game and was such a well-known racing personality that he even starred in a Miller Lite commercial at one point when that was all the rage. Moving forward this week, this type of Christmas week, Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, is the traditional opening of Santa Anita Park in California. It's always been a goal of mine sometime to attend on that day. Maybe someday I will. It's a day where we have some final races for the three-year-olds before they turn four next year, and it always has a tremendous card, and this year is no exception. On the day after Christmas, the third race is the San Antonio, and it appears to be a pretty good prep for the Pegasus race at World Cup that will be run at Gulfstream in 2018. Bob Baffert has two horses entered in there, Collected and Opportunity, both of whom try all the time, and Accelerate will again try to capture his best form. The highlight of the card, I believe, is the seventh race. That's the La Brea Stakes, and it'll be the return of Unique Bella. Unique Bella flashed so much promise early on in the three-year-old, went to the sidelines with a slight injury, returned in time for the Breeders' Cup, and put in a good effort in the Breeders' Cup against tougher older horses, but really from a early efforts in an outside post, she succumbed to those efforts and finished off the board. We will see whether or not she can return to that brilliant form that she showed earlier in the year in the La Brea on December 26th. Following up that is the Malibu, which is a traditional final graded stakes race for three-year-old colts and geldings, and this features Pavel and the undefeated and maybe unacclaimed CZ Rocket. I think maybe we need to keep an eye on CZ Rocket in that race. Saturday at Aqueduct, we always focus upon Aqueduct. It's the Gravesend Handicap. It's a race that's been run for quite some time, and our friend Life in Shambles will try to get the opportunity to catch a field that doesn't include his nemesis, Stall Walking Dude, and we hope Life in Shambles manages to find the wire in front. This week's news, somewhat slow on the racing news. There's always interesting races, but this time of year it's not often at this time of year that racing winds up on the front page, but at least here on Long Island it wound up on the front page this week with the announcement that New York State has agreed to a proposal by the NHL's team, the New York Islanders, to move their facility and build a new facility on the Belmont grounds and to look to play their games beginning in 2020 at a new 18,000-seat arena built in the parking lot of Belmont Park. This was accompanied by an announcement by the New York Racing Association that they will embark on a wholesale renovation of Belmont, which will include making the Belmont Park grounds a multi-use facility with a hotel, with restaurants, with shops, and a full entertainment complex, of which racing will be just one part. I had the opportunity today, of course, not surprisingly, this is big news in the racing community, and it is one that has left a lot of questions and one that everyone hopes proceeds nicely, but has led many people to question timing and to impact on its impact on the racing game. I had the opportunity this afternoon to speak with NYRA CEO Christopher Kay about this, and we candidly spoke about a number of implications of the plan, and I think you'll enjoy it. So with that, I'm going to play the interview with Christopher Kay from this afternoon. It runs about 30 minutes. Well, it's my Talk Racing Association CEO, Christopher Kay, to Racetrackers. Welcome, Christopher.
Bill, how are you?
Fine, thanks. You had a lot of exciting news this week. There were simultaneous announcements yesterday about both the NHL Islanders coming to Belmont Park and to Belmont itself undergoing a renovation.
Yes, we've been talking about actually having a renovation at Belmont for some time. And the process that has been going on for many months culminated in the decision yesterday by the state of New York to have the Islanders develop a portion of our property at Belmont. We think it will make for a very exciting and attractive alliance and partnership between a great franchise in the New York Islanders and, of course, a great franchise for the New York Racing Association.
Well, I've looked at the plans that you've revealed publicly, and it's quite a development. It includes a hotel, it includes shops, it includes restaurants. It seems like it used to be the racetrack was the destination that supported things like barber shops and restaurants. Now it looks like the plan is to have the shops and restaurants and hotels supply new fans for the racing world.
Well, I think it just is indicative of the fact that Americans today want lots of choices, and the more choices a destination can provide to the public, the more popular that destination will be. In a former life, I had the privilege to work for Universal Studios, and for anyone that has been to Orlando, they know that there are two theme parks at Universal that are tied together by an entertainment and retail district called City Walk and surrounded by hotel. This is, in effect, the same thing in that we New Yorkers love our sports franchise. And so we have two sports venues connected by a retail, entertainment, and hotel area.
Well, it's certainly, Orlando, more than most places, is a little bit of something for everyone, all age groups, all demographics, and I guess that's what you're looking to replicate here. It's an audacious project. It's going to require some financing. And I guess part of the problems that may come with it is that the land itself is owned by New York State. Do you see that as an inhibitor on getting financing?
No, I don't. And that's the reason why the state, Empire State Development Corporation, was the organization that selected amongst the various bidders for the property. I think actually there'll be a way that this will work out very well. The New York Islanders ownership group is putting up the money for this development, and I'm sure that they can obtain appropriate financing, but the promise for this particular collection of attractions is so compelling, and the people who are involved in the New York Islanders ownership group and the arena ownership partners are so successful in their respective field that I don't think that's going to be a problem. Just for your listeners, the ownership group of the arena he's really an A-list of successful people. The owner of the Islanders, obviously, is part of that group, and Scott Malkin is the primary owner. Scott has made a fortune in the experiential retail space. Then you also have the Sterling Properties, and that's owned by the Wilpon family, which, of course, operate the Met at Citi Field. And then the third group is called the Oakview Group, and the two founders of that group are Tim Leiwicki, who for many years was the CEO of the Anschutz Entertainment Group and ran stadiums all around the world, and his partner is Irving Azoff, one of the finest, if not the finest, agent for concerts and acts in the country. So it's a fantastic group of people that have done very well in their respective careers, and all of that will now be involved in the development of Belmont Park.
Well, it's clearly a group that's experienced in this type of development and promotion. Before we get to timing, I guess one of the things that could slow the timing down would be community objection. And I guess I've seen that either there's a group that has either threatened or has already brought suit to try to prevent the impact on the community. Do you foresee that being something that would be settled rather than litigated?
I have no idea. I do know this, that there were two different town hall meetings, one conducted at the Elmont Library before the bids were submitted, second one conducted about 2 weeks ago. And the overwhelming majority of people wanted to see this property developed. In the first set of meetings that was held, I believe, in the summer, I forget the exact date now, one woman stood there with her son, who's almost 5 feet tall. And she said to the group, you know, you guys have been talking about this for over 10 years. When the development plan was originally approved for this area, my son had not yet been born. And look at him now. So a lot of people just want to see something happen. In addition, a number of people came to that meeting saying, we want to see something happen that can enhance horse racing. A number of people came that said they were big fans of the Islanders. So, you know, I'm sure not everybody's going to be thrilled. I don't know what kind of grounds there would be to have a lawsuit, but that's one of the beauties of the fact that the state conducted the RFP process, and the state inherently is very fair, reasonable, and equitable in the approach that they follow.
Right. So assuming no delays are caused by outside influences, you're thinking about the breaking ground, if I read it correctly, sometime in mid-2018 for the Islander facility and being ready by 2020. Is that the same time? I'm sorry.
That is their goal. And whether that will happen or not, I don't know. That would be a very aggressive but very desirable timetable if it occurs.
Okay. Do you expect the Belmont renovations will take place on the same pace or at the same time?
I hope so. We are in the process of looking at how we can renovate the building, and it really gets down to a question of how much we have the money available and how long it takes to get a permitting process completed. But we would like to, you know, if everybody could be finished by 2020, that would be marvelous.
Well, I know everyone's excited about the project and what we've spoken about to date. Most of all listeners are concerned about the impact on racing. And I guess there's been a number of discussions about Belmont being closed at some point, but it sounds like for now you foresee Belmont being open in 2018 at least, and any disruption at Belmont being sometime past that?
I do. I think, number one, we're going to be open all of 2018. And as we develop our plans, I'm going to try our best to keep Belmont open for at least the spring meet when we have the Belmont Stakes. So we'll have to figure out when we can begin work and how long it will take to get the tracks renovated and all of that. We're going to try our best to make sure that the interruption is as minimal as possible.
Right.
It's premature for anyone to start speculating about that, because we've got to complete the design process. We've then got to go through approval process. Then we've got to get the permit. And we've got to figure out, okay, now here we are. Now we have the permit. How long is it going to take to get this work done? Getting a permit in June is entirely different than getting a permit in January, for example.
Right.
So there's a lot of issues out there that still need to be addressed, and a lot of complex matters that, based on timing, we'll address to accordingly.
Well, I guess those of us who've been around New York, the New York area, long enough, kind of remember Roosevelt Raceway trotting game being subsumed by the development around it. I guess racing, the racing community has to be a little bit concerned to make sure that racing remains the centerpiece. Will you try to insist that the racing be televised throughout the entire complex? I mean, some of the complaints that people have sometimes about the casino at Aqueduct is that you can't see the races on television there, where it would be a nice synergy if you could. Do you foresee having racing be the centerpiece of the entire project?
I guess I would say it differently. They're going to invest over $1 billion in their property, and they're going to want to make sure that fans come for their concerts, for their hockey games, and the like. And the idea of me insisting upon them putting our horse racing on their screens in between periods is just not going to be workable.
Okay.
I look upon it differently. I say that horse racing needs a shot in the arm. We, over the last 20 or 30 years, have not been able to generate new fans. We have not created new generations of fans. It used to be that people would bring their kids to the track, they'd fall in love with the game, and they would continue as adults. But they didn't bring their kids. And so how do you go out and get new generations of fans? We work very hard to make people understand that this is a fun place to come, get in a couple of races, have a party, have a great time, perhaps get dressed up, and it's a great event. But I'll tell you what, to be in a neighborhood now where you've got an outstanding 18,000-person facility that has so many different uses going on within it, and a fantastic retail area, and an exciting entertainment area, and a 3 or 4-star hotel, now you're the nation that's far bigger than any one venue. And now you'll have people who will be introduced to horse racing that otherwise wouldn't, and will be able to hopefully not only introduce them to the sport, but have them fall in love with it and become fans, and then bring their kids and revive an ascendancy, if you will, of more generations coming to the track.
Right. So the idea being,
I don't think there's any way we could be successful by saying, oh, horse racing has got to be dominant. Horse racing is part of an overall experience that has so many different things for so many different people.
Right. Okay. So the secondhand exposure, so to speak. So people who would come there for the complex itself will be exposed to racing that otherwise wouldn't have been.
I guess what I'd say is, you know, go back to our conversation earlier about Universal Studios. Universal Studios has two theme parks in Orlando. One is called Universal Studios Florida. The other is called Islands of Adventure. They now have a water park called Volcano Bay. Do people go because they want to see Universal Studios Florida? Do they go because they want to go to the theme park Island of Adventure? No, they go because of both. And so
Right. We
have something to offer. So I don't want to say one is more significant than the other, one is inferior to the other. The whole idea is now there's a collection of attractions which creates a real sense of destination, which brings people to that Belmont Park that might not otherwise have come.
Right, okay. I guess the development plans themselves don't touch upon the stable area, so there'll still be plenty of space to have a full complement of thoroughbreds on the grounds. I think that should calm horsemen's fears. I guess the second big development is you're looking to embrace night racing.
Yeah, so first, let me get back to your point. I'm not sure of any horseman who are concerned, and if they were, I guess they should give me a call. We have been engaged in an aggressive effort at Belmont over the last several years to renovate a number of existing dorms that had fallen into disrepair, and we've built a number, barns, and we've built a number of new barns. I think we have 299 new stables at Belmont. So we are either building new barns or renovating existing barns to provide greater capacity for our horse population at Belmont. And we've spent a lot of money over the last 4 years doing just that.
Well, I think that's, you know, where the development is for our listeners who don't know. It's on the parking side of the island. This building is on the parking side over by the Long Island Railroad station, which I guess you've gotten the commitment of the MTA to make it a permanent stop at all times now.
Well, you're right. The space that we're talking about for the Islanders arena and for the vast majority of the retail and entertainment hotel is only surface parking. And so we've got a lot of surface parking. And so, on a normal daily basis, we'll have plenty of other surface parking. So none of our guests will be adversely affected. And none of the area that's being the subject of this development includes the existing barns. So there'll be no adverse effect upon the barn population, and really there won't be much adverse effect, if any, on the parking for most days we operate.
Right. Well, to get back to the point about night racing, you managed to get the law changed, and it seems like you're thinking night racing may be worth a look at.
Yes, I do believe night racing is something that this sport and NYRA desperately need. And the reason for that is that we need to create new generations of fans, young people. Every business tries to get young people to come to their place of business and develop a relationship that will last a lifetime. The problem is that young people, they're at work during the day hours. That's why Major League Baseball and hockey and the NBA, they all have night games on weekdays. So what we said is we want to be able to do the same. We want to be able to have, say, Thursday night and Friday night races at Belmont during the spring and fall meet in the same way that the Yankees and the Mets have baseball games on Thursday and Friday night during the same month. We brought that to the attention of the legislature in June of this year, and in relatively quick order, the Senate passed our bill. Unfortunately, time ran out on the session, and it was not addressed by the Assembly, but we hope that in 2018 that will in fact occur, and not only because it benefits us, but because we think it also benefits the public. The public has a right to choose, and right now they can't choose to go to a thoroughbred racetrack at night because the law doesn't permit it. We want to make sure that people have that right to choose.
Right. So for all listeners, there was a deal struck decades ago that reserved nighttime for harness racing, and the thoroughbreds run during the day. I guess the New York area has had night racing for thoroughbreds. Meadowlands started that many years ago, but it was before simulcasting, and it seemed to be before actual national television or TV networks such as your own disseminated the races widely. So I guess whether it be the live audience or the television audience, you feel the nighttime has more eyeballs, so to speak.
I do. And look, when I was a kid, I went to baseball. And then you can follow baseball games on television. It's hard to cultivate fans when their first and only exposure is to the event on television because they can't come to the racetrack because they're at work. So, as I said, every other major sport in America has nighttime events on weekdays. We want to be able to do the same. And, we don't think this is going to hurt the harness racing. to the contrary, in our bill we said we would stagger our times so that we would not run at the same time as a harness race. So, for example, we might have a race at 7 and 7:30 and 8. They may have races at 7:15, 7:45, and 8:15. We actually think it might help drive more people to become interested in harness racing. You know, people should have a right to choose. Do you want to go watch thoroughbred racing or do you want to go watch harness racing? You should have the right to choose. And that's, again, why we think a statute should be passed giving us the ability to provide night racing at Belmont.
Right. Well, I guess with night racing, two things come to mind, and this leads to the actual Belmont facility. The Belmont facility, the racetrack itself, is so huge. You know, do you find the lighting cost to be prohibitive, or has that come down over the last years with the recent years with technology improvements?
It has come down. The technology is fantastic. The technology can really focus right there on the track, and with LED lighting, so you don't have diffusion of the light elsewhere. And you can actually turn up and down the lighting, so you could actually turn the lighting down to 50% utilization when we're not running and then turn it back up to 100% for, you know, a few minutes before the race, during the race, and a few minutes afterwards. So there have been great advancements. And although it costs more in year one, over a period of 4 to 7 years, we would get our money back, good for our neighbors, and it just makes a lot of sense.
Right, right. I guess the other thing that I saw mentioned, and I apologize, I don't know whether you mentioned it in an interview or I saw it somewhere else, but the possibility of building yet another track inside the turf course. And I guess my question is, given the size of Belmont itself, does that provide a satisfactory live viewing experience being so far away?
Well, for those of you who go to racetracks, it's amazing how you see so many people are watching the television screens or the monitors in their box until, you know, the race is right in front of them. It's a very interesting phenomenon how many people, when they're at the track, are watching a television set. So I'm not concerned about the viewing, and that would probably be for races that occur during inclement weather or cold weather. And most people are watching television sets indoors during those times anyway.
Okay, so another technological guess or another technological assist in watching races. Chris, I you know, this has been wonderful. I appreciate all your time. I guess we can never have a conversation about New York racing without somehow mentioning Saratoga, and I guess a lot of ideas have been floated. I haven't really heard much enthusiasm about a two-month Saratoga meet. I know the 2018 schedule is set. Do you foresee, as part of this renovation, expanding the Saratoga meet at any point?
Well, I think that, you know, we've found that 40 days have been successful. And I'm very pleased that over the last couple of years, what we've been able to do. In 2013, I joined on July 1st. And what we could really do that year was simply try to change our attitude towards our guests. You weren't customers. We didn't turn away from you. We treated you like a guest in our home. And, of course, Saratoga is sacred ground, so it was a privilege to do so. And we tried to interact with you, embrace you as if you were a guest. In 2014, we began a number of capital improvement projects to provide people of all ages, all demographic backgrounds. And each year we've been building upon that, such that our attendance the last 2 years has been in excess of 1,100,000 people. In addition, the wagering has been great. In 2015, we set a record, beating the prior record by 4.5%. In 2016, we almost beat that record in 2015, coming about $1 million short. In 2017, we crushed that 2015 record again, and in fact beat the old record by about 14.5%. We're now generating over $100 million more in handle during the Saratoga meet than we did when I started. So we're very pleased with that. And we're going to continue to do things that we think will enhance the experience for everyone involved. People that now come to Saratoga for 3 or 4 days, like for vacation, and for the quality of our racing, and for all the people that work for us and work the backstretch. Right now, I think we've got a winning formula. And it's about as much as I can say right now. And every year that I go up to Saratoga, the question is always the same. You know, I have it on good authority that you're going to change to a different number of days for the meet next year. And I say, gosh, that's news to me. Who's your source? And they never want to say.
Right.
Year, of course, there's been no change. And I'm asked again. And I say, is this the same reliable source you had last year? How did that work out? And for the 2017 Saratoga meet, on opening day, I was asked the same question. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, I think it shows how much people care about it. I guess it's better to have interest than no interest, I guess, in anything, even if it's a misguided interest. But
I agree with you. And a lot of people have interest in what we're offering, as opposed to what we might do next year or what we might change. It really has been gratifying how many people have come up and said, Saratoga has never looked better. They love the racing. They love the weekends. We did a change in the approach. We have a not-for-profit that is spotlighted every day. The leaders of many of those not-for-profits have expressed their sincere and deep appreciation for us giving so much attention to their cause. This year we created a smoke-free, alcohol-free, renovated child play area that has been well received by so many families of young kids. And those are the kind of kids we want to say, hey, it was fun to come to the racetrack, continue throughout their lives. So just, there are a lot of people that said a lot of good things about what we're doing, and I very much appreciate that kind of feedback, as well as the feedback from others who say, prove this, you can improve that. And we've incorporated a lot of the comments that have been made by our guests to try to make it a better experience.
Well, a little bit off topic before we let you go. I mean, you know, congratulations on the television network. The television exposure is superb. You know, it's the television exposure on your own network and the crew of people that you have and that you did have and you do have, you know, really, really do the sport well. And as an experienced fan, I appreciate the insights that they give us. It's not too basic, yet it's not heavy-handed. The TV operation is absolutely superb, as is the NYRA Rewards program. You know, I'm a big proponent of that, and I've told you both privately and publicly that the job your people do to make the NYRA Rewards people feel at home and feel comfortable is superb. So congratulations on both of those.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Bill. I am very proud of our NYRA TV crew. They do a fantastic job. And, you know, this year, our live television programming was in 75 million homes. We had over 105 hours of live television coverage on Fox on a national basis. And we had an additional 200-plus hours of coverage of live racing on MSG, Regional Sports Network, in the Northeast. So that was great. And to your point about the quality of our production and our personnel, Fox felt the same way, and we announced in August that we've entered into a 3-year extension of our existing agreement, which is great news, I think, not only for NYRA and Fox, but for horse racing fans across the country. And on as far as the betting, NYRA Best has become a phenomenon. NYRA Best is now operating in 29 states. We had a phenomenal year this year, and it really is generating a lot of activity and a lot of interest, not only growth in New York, but growth in every state across the country. So we couldn't be more pleased, and we feel as if, you know, there are lots of ADW companies out there, but when you marry our innovative television programming with NYRA Best, well, I think it's a real differentiator that's been very well received and appreciated by horse players across the country.
No, it clearly has. It's come a long way from the days when you had to call a sports phone or a race phone to hear the last 15 seconds of the stretch call and try to guess when it was up there. Well, Chris,
you're
I want to
right.
thank you for
you're all right.
I want to thank you for the time today. I know you've been busy announcing this, and it's an exciting program, and you know, we wish you all the best with it, and you know, we'll I certainly hope you'll come back to give us updates as we move forward, and you know, the racing world is you know, is looking for Belmont to be the jewel that it's been in the past, and you know, let's you know, best of that Godspeed with your efforts to put together the complex that you've described.
Well, thank you very much, and to you and your fans and your audience and your family, may you have a happy holiday season.
Same to you. Christopher Kay, everyone, thank you very much.
So there we have it. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I tried to touch upon as many topics that I thought were relevant, and I know everyone has questions about the development. It seems like it's going to be a long-term project, and racing will be just one piece of an overall entertainment complex. And maybe it's the formula for the future of racing. I thank Christopher Kay for taking the time this afternoon to speak to us. And, of course, we'll always be interested in our fans' feedback. You know, with that, I think this being Christmas week and all, I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to everybody who listens to the show. I'm grateful for everyone's time and effort. I'm grateful for all our guests, all our supporters, the comments that I get both offline and after the show. I appreciate them all the time from everyone. And it's a good game, and it's a bunch of good fans. And I hope we enjoy the show. So with that, I wish everyone a Merry Christmas. We're going to call it early tonight, and let's look forward to next week. Thanks, everyone.